This is Marking Out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Follow on Twitter. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Marking out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Spreading like fisting. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. We're marking out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans.
Welcome to Marking Out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans. This is episode 690. Make sure that you check out our previous episodes at markingout.com. We are also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you're listening to podcasts. Make sure you rate us a 5-star frog splash of a rating. Buy a t-shirt over at prowrestlingtees.com/markingout. Also, check us out on Instagram at markingout11, on TikTok for the next 9 months.
Unless that's got to be a lawsuit.
Yeah, unless things change. For now, let's keep on following us for now. Make sure that you check us out on Instagram. Make sure that you check us out over on Twitter at Marking Out. Give us a like on Facebook and wherever else you can follow us on social media platforms. It is me. It is I. It is Dave the Rave. And you can check me out on social media platforms at DavidPTDPT. Go check out Chris at ChrisSweenDog on Twitter and CMSweeney85 on Instagram. And, of course, go check out Brandon at BTTG161 on all social media platforms. Hey, Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing awesome as always. How about yourself?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Tell me, are you feeling any better? 100%?
Here and there.
There we go.
I am quite annoyed with Target right now because I've been searching for over a month for the brand new Anthony Bowens figure.
Yeah.
And I think the distribution for the Jazzware figures are just trash. I don't know what the deal is. I can't find it. And then I went to one Target and they said, oh, we're going to get a shipment in Monday's date, last Monday. And I was there on Friday and I was like, let me just go look at the figures, happened to see three of the figures from the set, no Bowens, so that was before the date that they gave me. And then they said that there's no other shipments coming in for that series, so I have no idea what's going on with that. And I think it's super annoying that they don't even sell the figure on their website. When you go on their site and look for the figure, it's Ringside Collectibles charging way more money. So it doesn't even show in their system if they're getting the figure in, because the only version of that in their system is Ringside Collectibles. Mm-hmm. So it's very annoying that I can't just go to Target and get this Anthony Bowens figure. Someone who we've known from the start of their career, I just want to support.
Of course. I mean, just like you just want to support your friends and stuff like that. So
yeah, literally the only figures that I buy these days are of people who I've known on the independents and stuff. Like the only other right now figure of AEW that is planned outside of Bowens is Alex Reynolds. And I don't know when the hell that's coming out, but if I'm having this much difficulty finding Bowens, I feel like I'm going to have a same amount of difficulty finding Alex Reynolds.
Yeah. I could see that, which is unfortunate,
I also went to my aunt and uncle's house for Passover. We did a very, very abridged Seder. They have, I don't know if it's the right word, toddlers. I don't know if that's correct, but they have young kids there now. So I don't know how, I don't remember being at a Seder that young. I know we definitely were. But
yeah, you, yeah.
But like there's, why? I can't. There's no way I was paying attention to a Passover Seder at that age.
No, you're, I don't think anybody really does at a young age. You're just kind of watching the crowd and stuff like that and counting the time. Or I know for me, sometimes we would, like as a kid, I feel like I would break away from the table sometimes, but it would be one of those things where you had to stay at the table too.
It was funny though. My cousin's older daughter was super excited about trying to find the Afikoman.
Did she find it?
Yeah, she did.
Of course.
Yeah. It was hidden. Cool. It's not like it was an easy spot or anything.
No. That's cool, though, you know, but happy Passover to everybody.
Also, I got to ask over you, here too. did you ever find the Afikoman as a kid?
Yeah, of course.
How much did you get for it?
Oh, I think 200.
No, like how much did you actually get for it? Come on.
Probably a dollar, maybe five if you, maybe a dollar, maybe five, $5 if you're lucky. I feel like it was a dollar or two.
I remember some Passovers where I feel like I might have gotten 5 or 20. I don't know if it's 5 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
But they pulled out $2. I was like, that doesn't seem right. It seems like the price should be going up since we were kids.
That's what my little cousin said. She told my dad with inflation and stuff, she's asking for 15. My dad was just like, what do you mean? She's like, everything's getting more expensive. And it's the Afikoman's 15.
Like, I'd love to know how much the Tooth Fairy gives these days.
Right? It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. No. I think it was like a dollar or two back then. Back in our day.
Yeah, I don't think it was a dollar for me, though. I really feel it was like five. And maybe I was once lucky and got 20. I don't remember. Fully, obviously. That was a very long time ago.
I definitely didn't get 20.
It was like 30 years ago. Yeah. How was your week?
It was good. It was a good week, you know? Right now we got playoffs taking place with a lot of the New York teams are involved, which is incredible. The Mets are playing well right now. Everything is going incredible. Everything is a lot of awesomeness taking place. Right now, I am looking into potentially next year going to Japan for a conference. I was asked to be brought on for a talk over there, so we'll see if it all gets accepted. That would be
January 4th or what? When is this?
This would be May. So I would be over there probably for my birthday, I think. I think it would be the end of May that I would be in Japan, and I'd probably be there maybe, I mean, I you would have to take at least a week and a half, right?
There's like too much to do in Japan.
Yeah, there's so much to do there. I know I got to go to Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, like I would love to go to the wrestling side of Japan, and then I would love to go to like the Disney side of Japan, and then of course like the historical stuff as well. But
yeah, all of it, you know, it's just go to Ribera, you know. Yeah,
imagine, but you're the first ever wrestling podcaster to get a jacket.
Yeah, right. Be like, yeah, no, you know, I see that you got a lot of my brothers on the wall. So
you walk around with a microphone.
You may have heard of us. Check us out on Twitter. We got really famous. Thanks, Matt Cardona. But check us out. Maybe, you know. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Matt is on the wall. Should I text him to tell him that I'm here right now? Maybe I'll show you, and then I could get a jacket that way. I could totally see that going well.
You never know.
Yeah. Japan just seems fascinating, just beautiful. So I hope that goes through. That would be really cool. But let's get on to it. Let's talk about some releases that took place in WWE this week. We had some releases that took place during SmackDown that Brandon spoke about. But more releases took place this week. One of the most prominent ones that got out there because of his video was Cameron Grimes.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And then apparently he was told, like, the week before by a higher-up that he's going to have a job for life or something. And then gets released. That's kind of weird. I don't know who's doing these releases, if it's Endeavor or what, or TKO or whatever. But it's unfortunate. Yeah. Von Wagner was also released, which makes no sense. I saw I hate listening to Meltzer. I saw the tweet come across my timeline. I believe it was Meltzer who reported it, saying that he was looked at as a main roster superstar and they've done nothing with him. So that's why the release came, which makes absolutely no sense because in the draft last year, he went undrafted. He was a free agent and had one match. He was on the in a battle royal on Monday Night Raw. And then literally everything else from that was he had a whole ass storyline on NXT. So how they could, in their minds, see that as a main roster thing, if that's actually accurate, makes absolutely no sense as to why Von Wagner was released.
Yeah, there's so, I mean, there's just so many things that make you wonder.
And then the other two that were released was Indusheer, and that's very unfortunate. You and I, both huge fans of Indusheer. Obviously, Jinder Mahal was released on Friday, which still I don't understand. I feel like three of them could have 100% done many big things in NXT or any other roster that they were on.
Yeah, this one definitely bothered me the most, especially because I'm a big fan of them all. So for Indusheer to get released, I don't understand it. I don't understand how they dropped the ball with them. So much potential. And even nothing for nothing, but with wanting to expand to the market in India, you just released a majority of, if not all of your wrestlers from India.
Not all, but...
Like, nobody else is coming to mind that is
well, one of the members of AOP are.
Okay, so AOP.
And then Guru Raj is still on the roster page, but he has not had a match in years. I don't know where he's been.
Exactly, you know? That's the thing. Like, it's, I feel like it was just a big mistake to release them.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Who knows?
I have to assume Cameron Grimes will go to TNA. And I have to assume that Cameron Grimes will be back in WWE at some point.
I'll be honest with you. I think that Cameron Grimes will... I agree. I just texted Chris, too. I think he'll go to TNA. Apparently, he was helping train Logan Paul, too. So, for his wrestling. So, I could see Cameron Grimes coming back. I could see Indusheer coming back at some point, but... Who knows? Maybe they...
I think, honestly, the big mistake with Cameron Grimes was moving him up to the main roster.
Because
they moved him up to the main roster and then didn't do anything with him.
Yeah. I mean, they were trying to make room down in NXT, it seems, but without a projected reason for what to utilize for.
Yeah. And which is, that's what's very dangerous about this draft. You're going to... Especially now with NXT involved, you're going to have NXT call-ups and... You have to do something with them.
Yeah. I wonder if the 90-day compete clauses will hold in a court of law any longer with the entire non-compete clauses now.
Well, is that officially... That's not signed... It's not in effect until 120 days or something, I think.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't...
Once that goes into effect, I don't know if that would be considered...
The current contracts that are signed would still stay intact, I believe. But
I don't know.
The next group of people who sign to any company, I don't think AEW has a non-compete gimmick. I think the next group of people who would sign to WWE would have that. It would just not exist. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
But it's unfortunate when they do the releases in WWE always. But we had Monday Night Raw taking place this week. It kicked off with Jey Uso, who was interrupted by Damian Priest. And Priest put Jey Uso over. And he spoke about taking Jey out to party the whatever many weeks ago, months ago, years ago, whenever it was. And they both spoke with each other at that night out celebration or whatever. And they were like, oh, we're next. And then Priest corrected that story from whatever many moons ago and said, well, actually, I'm next. I'm champion. And then Jey Uso clapped back with a bunch of stuff to put Damian Priest down. And he yelled that he'll be the next champion. And then JD McDonagh showed up and Jey ended up super kicking Damian Priest. It was a little awkward, but that was the end of that segment.
Yeah.
But after that, we had the first matchup. Awesome Truth picked up the victory over the DIY to pick up the victory. I think I said pick up the victory twice in that sentence, but to retain the tag team championships. And I thought the match was good. I like when Ciampa hit the pedigree on R-Truth.
Yeah.
And when he did that, I thought the match was over. I actually thought DIY was about to walk away with the titles.
Oh, wow.
Right then and there. And then the match continued. They hit the meat in the middle, and I was like, oh, that's going to be the end of the match, and they're going to be the champions again, or the champions. And then Miz broke that up, and eventually they got the win. They hit the lie detector and skull-crushing finale. I forget what they had a name for it. I can't remember what the combined name was.
I don't remember the name, but they definitely... This was an entertaining match. I didn't think that DIY was going to win. Actually,
I went into this match thinking the Awesome Truth were going to 100% retain. And then they did those spots, and I was like, oh, maybe this is it for the Awesome Truth.
Actually, they did get me with the...
Meat in the middle?
Yeah, the meat in the middle. The pedigree... I didn't get really worked on, but the other one, I did start to think like, huh, can they get it? But yeah, I don't think that I think Awesome Truth will be a transitional champion. I don't think they're going to hold it for multiple months.
At this point, I can't see who will be the next to take the titles from them. Unless it's going to be a heel DIY. Right now, we saw them shake. Well, Johnny shook hands afterwards with Miz and R-Truth. Ciampa refused to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe Ciampa is like, wait a minute. He's on the same wavelength as Candace and Indy Hartwell. This isn't getting us anywhere. And maybe he'll convince Johnny to eventually turn heel too. And then, boom, the way is back to being the way with the addition of Tommaso Ciampa. And they're heels. So.
I don't know. It's tough to say, but.
After that.
Next up, we had
Imperium.
Oh, yeah. You had Imperium and Gunther coming back after. It's his first appearance since losing his championship. Coming to Monday Night Raw. Speaking about it all.
He thanked Sami Zayn for lifting the weight off his shoulders of being the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion. And how he's now gone from going... He was the hunted and now he's the hunter. And then he declared for the King of the Ring. I thought it was a bit weird for him to like thank Sami Zayn. Be like, oh, you actually did me a favor by lifting the weight off my shoulders of carrying the longest reigning... Intercontinental Championship title in history.
Meh.
I thought that was weird. But he declares for the King of the Ring, and then that brought out New Day. And Xavier Woods brought up being the reigning King of the Ring, which his reign really kind of fell short due to injury, unfortunately. So, is he really the reigning King of the Ring? Technically, yes, but... On a technicality, yes, but I mean, storyline-wise, it has been months.
Yeah.
But Gunther challenged them to a match, and then New Day picked up the victory over Imperium, which I really feel like I didn't need to see this. The match was fine, but I just didn't need the match. But it furthered storyline for Gunther because he was pissed off about the loss, and then Kaiser beat Giovanni Vinci down after that.
Yeah, this entire thing, it was a good match, but it just got us, the entire reasoning was to get us to the beatdown at the end of the match, which we don't know if he's going to be aligned with Gunther still.
Well, so Kaiser backs off and then eventually runs back down, hits a huge drive-by on the steel steps, which I don't want Imperium to be broken up. And we did see Kaiser go to the back and, like, kind of nod at Gunther.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like they're still together, and I feel like we've seen this before with Imperium.
Yeah.
So I can't say that they're broken up. We've seen them do that to Giovanni Vinci before, I think.
Yeah, we have. I mean, so, he is, yeah.
So I'm not ready to say Imperium is done, and I hope they're not. But there's a possibility.
Yeah, I kind of think that they are done, or at least they're done with Giovanni Vinci.
Bring back Alexander Wolf. Make them the four-man team again.
I would love for Alexander Wolf to be back. Where is he? MLW or something?
I have no idea. Germany.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Man, after that, we saw Drew McIntyre come out, and he spoke about CM Punk, and he went to speak about the King of the Ring, but Sheamus interrupted. And he spoke to Drew McIntyre about getting his moment at WrestleMania and how he ended up blowing it over a spat with CM Punk. And then Drew McIntyre made fun of Sheamus's weight. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that that entire burger after burger after burger part was actually pretty good.
Sheamus said it himself on Twitter, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think he owned up to everything because the fans were coming at, the haters and trolls were coming at him pretty hard.
Yeah.
And they totally rushed him back into the ring before he was able to get into a ring shape that he would want to be.
Also, he already looks different than last week.
Yeah, I totally noticed that too. He already looked a lot different from the previous week. You know, everybody's got to lay off him. But for Drew McIntyre to utilize this in the promo to get one back to him, I thought that was very good, especially because the internet's the internet. And Drew McIntyre obviously pays attention to what people are saying on there.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a good thing to include with that.
And then
definitely
Sheamus,
got the reaction from the crowd.
Sheamus went and picked up a victory over Shinsuke Nakamura. And I thought, given what just happened in that promo, I thought for sure we were going to see Drew McIntyre cost Sheamus the match. So I was surprised when that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I guess it really wouldn't have been good to have Sheamus lose the week after returning.
No, you can't have him lose.
Like, I'm up in the air with that. I'm more so on the side of, like, I would rather not see Sheamus lose so quickly.
Uh-huh.
But also, I could see, if they were to do that and it was McIntyre being the reason why Sheamus lost, I was like, it makes sense as to why that happened in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Sami Zayn speak about Chad Gable, and then Bronson Reed ends up showing up, putting Sami Zayn on notice, and he walked off and then turned back and attacked Sami Zayn. Not a great week for Sami Zayn as far as attacks go, sneak attacks.
No, Sami Zayn is, he's just taking the beat down from everybody.
So that right there still continues the Bronson Reed inside the Intercontinental Championship storyline somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not we see that match for the title, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
After that, we had another segment with Chad Gable. He had the whole Alpha Academy with him. And he said that Sami Zayn rubbed everything in his face, and it should have been him to have the match at WrestleMania, which I agree with. And it should have been his daughter in the front row, not Sami Zayn's wife. And it should have been his moment. And then he said that he's been wasting his time training a bunch of losers. He's lost focus. And then he ran the Alpha Academy down to their faces. And
yeah,
I think him,
I thought this was
him running Otis down, I think, hurt the most to me.
I thought that this was really a solid segment, though. I mean, originally I didn't know how it was going to go. I didn't know if everybody in the ring was going to turn on him. It was, you didn't know how it was going to turn out and play off. You didn't know if Chad was going to attack somebody. But Chad Gable went into everybody, calling them all out, and everybody kind of just took it and I guess maybe understood that, yeah, we're not living up to where we should be. And I mean, even Tozawa, I think, took to Twitter and said something about, yeah, like, I am a loser or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And I mean, Chad Gable said they can't be upset with him because they signed up for this. And now they'll all focus on him winning the Intercontinental Championship and they'll help him to do it. Yeah. So it seems like they're still going to be with Chad Gable. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he does become Intercontinental Championship champion at some point.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Earlier in the night, they had a video for Andrade basically saying he's not a fool, and it was targeted towards Judgment Day, and he claimed that he is now their biggest problem. And then fast forward in the night, we have Andrade and Ricochet pick up the victory over Santos Escobar and JD McDonagh. Dominic Mysterio showed up on Monday Night Raw in a sling, and he got Santos Escobar to do him a favor and tag with JD McDonagh, which Damian Priest was annoyed at. It wasn't ran by him. Dominic also said that Ricochet's lucky he's not cleared, because he'd obviously pick up the victory over Ricochet, according to him. Or it was implied.
Yeah.
And then he also went out to have a stare down with Liv Morgan backstage. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah. Man. But the match I thought was decent. I think the crowd seemed kind of dead for this match. They did chant for Dominic to shave his mustache. He showed up on Raw with a mustache out of nowhere. But I thought the match was decent, like I said. The spot where Andrade threw JD McDonagh off the top rope and then Santos Escobar hit a Hurricane Rana to Ricochet, where Ricochet ends up basically hitting a Harlem Hangover to JD off of the Hurricane Rana that Santos did. I thought that was a really good, like, finish.
I thought something that was, like, I thought that stare down with Liv Morgan and Dom after was more intense than anything.
People were like, oh my God, Dom's going to help Liv Morgan said, win though. The title. How does that even make sense? That'd be so stupid. Wait, people were thinking that Dominic was going to help Liv Morgan win the title.
That same night?
I mean, in general. I don't know if it was specifically that night, but in any world, that makes no sense.
I mean, it could, but not so quickly.
It literally can't.
The only way it would make sense is if Liv Morgan romantically plays him.
I don't want to see that at all. I don't want a romance angle. I'm dealing with that, just getting out of that relationship and... AEW, we don't need that on TV.
So, but that's the only way that would work is if there was a romantic angle where Liv Morgan.
That would be dumb. He was a big public thing. He's engaged. He's married.
Yeah, but you have to.
Don't need to see that. And then Damian Priest took out Andrade and Ricochet after the match, and he was pissed off at Dominic for them losing because Dominic vouched for Santos Escobar, who owed him a favor for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then
next up, you had the main event of the evening. We had the Women's Battle Royal to see who was going to become the new women's champion. Becky Lynch picks up the victory. Where do we want to start with this?
Well, I think right at the beginning of the episode of Monday Night Raw, Michael Cole and Pat McAfee hyped this up big time. And they aired a bunch of promos for this. Nia Jax and Liv Morgan got into a pull apart right before this match. And then Becky Lynch did one of those walking promos to the ring. And I liked that she gave Maxine a pep talk, especially after what just took place with the Alpha Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool. But the match itself, Maxine had a huge moment in this where she eliminated Candice LeRae. And then she eliminated Indy Hartwell. So I thought that was really cool. I really liked the elimination from Nia Jax to Ivy Nile, because she locked Nia Jax in that armbar over the rope, and Nia Jax just like swung her into the ring post for her to drop and then get eliminated. And then Maxine went at Nia Jax, and the fans were pretty behind Maxine in this segment.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I think my favorite part was Chelsea Green being eliminated twice from the Battle Royal.
Yeah, before that, Becky Lynch took Piper Niven out, and then Piper dragged Becky Lynch out of the ring and attacked her. And then she dragged Nia Jax out of the ring to help Chelsea Green out, who was dealing with Nia Jax. And then Nia ends up hitting a rock bottom or a choke slam, whatever you want to call it, onto Becky Lynch, who was on the commentary table. And then she hit the Samoan drop onto her. Chelsea, while the referees are dealing with all of this, gets eliminated. And then she like hops back up onto the apron. I thought that was a hilarious spot. She got eliminated like right after that.
What I thought was hilarious too is like the referees were yelling at her, get back in the ring. And she's like, what? You want me to get back in the ring? Okay.
I feel like she should have been at least a Final Four. Because of that moment. If you're not going to have Chelsea Green win, she should have been part of that Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
So that was unfortunate.
I could agree with that.
But it came down to Liv Morgan, Nia Jax, and Becky Lynch. And then Liv and Becky worked together to get Nia Jax out of the match. And then Liv Morgan, something that I didn't notice until rewatching the ending, she pulled Becky Lynch out onto the apron through the second rope. So even if Becky Lynch fell off of the apron when they were brawling on the apron, she still would have been in the match. Liv Morgan was over the top rope. So, like, Becky Lynch hits that manhandle slam on Liv Morgan. That's how she picks up the victory. Prior to that, Becky Lynch could have fallen off the apron. Fans would have thought Becky Lynch lost. But she would have been still part of the match. So
that's interesting.
But I really do think that Liv Morgan was the one who needed that victory. So that sucked to me. But
okay. I don't know. I don't think that Liv Morgan needed the victory for this one.
I don't know.
I don't think she needed the victory.
I think because she was the one that injured Rhea Ripley. And it's her revenge tour. I feel like that is why she was the one that needed to be it. And if it wasn't going to be Liv Morgan, I would have wanted it to be like a surprise, like Chelsea Green. But
I think that I wouldn't have had Liv Morgan win it. This is for the championship. Let Liv Morgan build up more instead of having her go directly into holding the championship. And I don't think it was necessary for Liv Morgan to win. What I did like was Piper Niven going at it with Becky Lynch too. There was so many side things that took place during this match that was very enjoyable and that you maybe wouldn't have expected. But for Becky Lynch to win, I'll go with it. Fine. I didn't understand the criticism online comparing Becky Lynch to Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah, absolutely not. That's the dumbest thing possible.
Yeah, I didn't understand that or the correlation to any of that.
Especially because she's not the one booking the goddamn show. It's not Hulk Hogan at all.
No, and I mean, she just put over Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. And Becky Lynch has put over many wrestlers in the past. So for you to compare her to Hulk Hogan just because she won the Battle Royal because the current champion got a freak injury, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I do think that if this title reign is like her NXT title reign, then I'm completely fine with her winning the title. But and it was cool to see her celebrate in the crowd the way they did that. But I think I'm going to stand firm on my belief that it should have been Liv Morgan to win.
Right.
Her NXT title reign was very enjoyable, and it enhanced, I think, a lot of people. So hopefully we get this with this championship. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
we'll see how that plays out. Speaking of NXT, we'll move over to NXT Spring Breakin', which opened with Ava, Adam Pearce, and Nick Aldis via satellite. They were basically just saying that nothing will be the same after this episode of NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And just hyped up the draft that's happening. And it kicked off with Roxanne Perez picking up the victory over Tatum Paxley and Lyra Valkyria to retain the women's championship in a very fast-paced match. I liked the crossface spot where Roxanne had it locked in on Lyra Valkyria and Tatum Paxley locked Roxanne in a crossface to break it up. I thought that was pretty cool. And the fans were very behind Tatum Paxley here. And she almost got that victory, but Roxanne Perez ends up reversing her pin on Lyra Valkyria with that jackknife cover to get the victory. I thought this was a very well done match.
I thought for sure Tatum Paxley was about to win the championship. That entire finish, that entire end of the match, that was awesome. That was a lot of fun. That entire end of the match. And then for Roxanne Perez to come out of nowhere and do the...
jackknife?
Yeah. I thought that the end was totally awesome. I would say Paxley versus Perez has to happen now, right?
I don't know if that'll happen, but I was very happy with the way Tatum Paxley was treated in this match.
Yeah.
After that, we saw the D'Angelo family pick up the victory over No Quarter Catch Crew. Super chaotic. This was all over the place. Charlie Dempsey ended up the one being the one to eat the pin. So I feel like that has to secure Tony D'Angelo a Heritage Cup match.
Mm.
And maybe that'll be like, okay, now your debt's even if you give me the match or something like that. So after that, we saw Jada Parker pick up the victory over Fallon Henley, which was set up via a backstage segment where Thea Hale was thanking her and Kalani Jordan for making, or I guess just for really being friends to her or whatever. And Jada Parker wasn't having it. And the match gets set up. I did not think Jada Parker was going to be the one to win this.
I definitely did not expect that either, especially with Fallon Henley being who she is.
Yeah. But JC Jane ends up cutting a promo on Thea Hale afterwards, and it sets up a match for next week's Spring Breakin', night two. And then something else that set up next week's Spring Breakin', we had Lola Vice and Natalya have a contract signing for the NXT Underground match, where we knew that Carmen Petrovic was going to be in Natty's corner, and it was a big mystery as to who was going to be in the corner of Lola Vice for that Underground match. And it turned out to be a returning Shayna Baszler. And it turned into a little scuffle. Nothing like a normal contract signing as far as scuffles go.
Uh-huh.
So I liked that. I didn't mind that it didn't like break down into like, oh, someone went through a table. And it was a very different version of a contract signing too. It was, I think it was probably done more so like a UFC sort of event.
Yeah. So, which makes sense because like with the involvement of UFC and even that NXT UFC announcement, you know?
Battleground taking place at the Apex that people hate. I don't know how that's going to look for wrestling. I think there's like nobody that's in there. I don't know how many people actually show up to these events, but apparently it's not many. I think there's... on a good day, you can have less than 1,000 packed in is the capacity, which I think is fine. I mean, for an NXT crowd especially, but I don't know how any of that's going to work. And I don't know. People say they're some of the worst UFC events, so I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to have to see what happens. It's definitely interesting to see.
Yeah. After that, they had a video for the Final Testament just saying that they're coming for all the titles in NXT. They showed the tag teams in NXT. After that, and they spoke about how they hate the main roster guys coming down from NXT for the titles right in front of Joaquin Wilde's face, which I thought was funny. And then the OC walked in and agreed with them, which is also funny because they are main roster people coming down for NXT titles. And then Malik Blade broke a mirror by mistake. So I think that'll eventually tie into his character with the whole bad luck and everything. Yeah, but with the Final Testament putting all the titles on notice, I don't know if that also includes Scarlett putting Roxanne Perez on notice. We don't see her wrestle often, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I don't know either.
But after that, we saw Sol Ruka pick up the victory over Blair Davenport in a beach brawl match. So there was a bunch of goofy-themed weapon spots, which overall, I think it makes sense. The referee getting hit in the face by the beach ball was hilarious. And I enjoy this match. I feel like they've done better sort of brawl matches like this before, but Sol Ruka started with that surfboard right to the head and ended the match by hitting a springboard soul snatcher onto a boogie board to win that match.
Never seen that one before.
I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, we've seen, never seen it done on a boogie board.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, never on the on the boogie board.
So, and know? I have to assume that a bunch of those match, those items will end up on WWE's auction site soon. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? You know, sell it. But next up, you had Lexus King pick up the victory over Baron Corbin.
Which also, I don't know about you. From a segment from the other day where I guess Lexus King gave Baron Corbin a going away gift or whatever because there's chatter about him ending up on the main roster. So,
I was actually surprised that Lexus King picked up the victory.
I too. I didn't expect him to win.
Yeah. I feel like I was expecting Baron Corbin to win.
But he did try to cheat, and the referee saw it. And then Lexus King ends up pushing Baron Corbin into the referee. And Corbin caught himself and stopped right before he knocked down the referee. But because the referee couldn't see, Lexus King was able to kick Baron Corbin below the belt and get that victory, the advantage for the victory. So,
yeah,
I'm completely fine when a heel does something like that.
Yeah, I agree. It's a solid win for Lexus King, and it's fun to watch Lexus King develop in NXT. You know, but next up you had Trick Williams take on Ilya Dragunov for the NXT Championship. And your new NXT Champion, Trick Williams, he picked up the victory. This match was fun, and the crowd was so heavy behind it.
They pushed it really big. They had main roster guys show up or returning NXT stars come back for this. They showed videos from main roster superstars giving their predictions. The World Heavyweight Champion, Damian Priest, showed up for this. And they started this match on fire. I think it was really cool to see Trick Williams use an H-bomb on Ilya Dragunov. And then he followed it up with a Torpedo Moscow. And it's like, obviously he's using Ilya's moves. He's obviously studied tape. And he's doing what he needs to do to get that victory. We saw Trick Williams hit that bookend off the barricade through the commentary table with the Creeds and Ivy Nile like marking out behind him. I thought that was cool.
I was definitely surprised by him taking the moves of Dragunov, though. Like, I didn't expect that.
What do you mean?
That kind of threw me off. I don't know why that was necessary.
In what way?
Well, with the where he did the exact same taunt going into the Dragunov's finisher and stuff like that. Like, it didn't make sense to me why he would do that.
He's studying Ilya Dragunov. He's doing exactly what he needed to do to pick up that victory. And if it happens to be that he needs to go for an H-bomb or a Torpedo Moscow, he'll do it. And it's not like that was the thing that ended the match for him, because we still have the match continue after that. Ilya Dragunov hit an H-bomb from the middle rope, goes up to the top rope and hits another H-bomb. And when he falls down on that, he hurts his hand, which was a callback to his hand being injured. And then the very last spot of this match, which goddamn melted the internet, Dragunov goes for the Torpedo Moscow. and Trick Williams nails him with that knee, which is a direct callback to Vengeance Day, where on the flip side of that, it was Ilya Dragunov who connected with the Torpedo Moscow to retain the championship. This time it was Trick connecting with his knee to win the championship from Ilya Dragunov, who now has to leave NXT.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of knew the I think that we all knew the outcome of this one. But
I think, yeah, once that was presented. And then he presented the championship to Trick Williams, which I thought was really cool. And he gave him that hug and he put him over.
Yeah. It was definitely a nice little ad.
I found it to be super annoying that I don't know if you want to call them the AEW Galaxy, the IWC, or what?
Mm-hmm.
Got so pissed off at the end of this match because that's apparently how Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay ended at Dynasty on Sunday.
I don't think that it would be an intentional thing.
There's absolutely no way in hell I'm thinking that's an intentional thing. It's a callback to their last championship match.
Yeah.
Like how, and then once you put that in their face, they still say no. This is an intentional thing. WWE is a scummy company. You support trash.
Yeah.
You're wrong. It's okay to be wrong. It's so goofy. And then when they're like not going to fully accept at all that this was done, the exact same spot was done at Vengeance Day in February, they block you and then still continue to talk trash about you.
Mm-hmm.
People need to grow up.
Yeah, agreed.
Not everything is AEW versus WWE. It shouldn't be.
No.
But that's NXT. Going to move over to SmackDown. It was the WWE draft, and they really hyped that up. They showed the two rooms with legends like the Dudley Boys, Teddy Long, JBL, Michelle McCool, and Torrie Wilson, as well as the general managers and some other people, I guess network people, in quotes. And Paul Heyman opened the show basically to say that Roman Reigns has withdrawn himself from the draft, so somebody else can be drafted at number one. And then we open up with the contract signing for Backlash with Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. AJ Styles brought up how he and Cody have been down the same roads. They've both had to have proved themselves outside of WWE. And then he brought up how Dusty Rhodes has given both of them advice and how he learned a lot from Dusty Rhodes. And this contract signing went off without a hitch. Not even a little scuffle like NXT. And then Triple H showed up and I guess pulled Cody in over to announce the first picks of the draft. All the champions were not eligible except for the women's tag team champions. But SmackDown number one overall draft pick of this draft was Bianca Belair, which I think is a huge statement. I think that's awesome for her. And she's a phenomenal athlete, so I think that's awesome. Monday Night Raw chose Jey Uso, which I wasn't expecting, but it makes 100% sense if he's going into that match against Damian Priest for the championship. If you can't pick the champion, you should pick the challenger. Then the biggest shock, perhaps, not even a shock, because we all knew it was happening. We just spoke recently. Carmelo Hayes went up at number three. I think that's the surprising part, is that he was drafted so in the first round. So I think that's huge for Carmelo Hayes. Seth Rollins was the final pick for round one for Monday Night Raw. And then Carmelo Hayes came out and challenged Cody Rhodes for the main event. And that match gets made. The first match of the evening, I think it was like 30 minutes into the show, we saw Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee pick up the victory over Los Lotharios, which I thought was a decent match. There was some fast-paced action to this, but there wasn't much to this match. It was just a win for Dragon Lee. And then the big thing afterwards was Santos Escobar coming out. And he said that he wasn't the person that attacked Dragon Lee. He's a man of his word. Electra Lopez has been working on finding footage of who attacked Dragon Lee, and she found it. And they played it. It was Carlito, just like everybody thought it was going to be Carlito. And then Carlito attacked Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee in the ring and ran off. So, right now it's Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee, and Joaquin Wilde. Because Cruz del Toro's out with an injury. Zelina Vega's still there. And we don't know if Carlito is going to join Legado del Fantasma, but it gets Carlito as a heel against LWO. After that, Bron Breakker picked up the victory over Cedric Alexander. We really haven't seen much of Cedric recently, and the match reflected that. Bron Breakker speared him. That was it. Cedric was going for a handspring move, spear, boom. We also got a Wyatt tease during this, but I didn't see there if there was a QR code or whatnot. After that, Michelle McCool and Tori Wilson came out to announce the draft picks. SmackDown picked Orton. Monday Night Raw chose Bron Breakker, which I think is so stupid that he was even eligible. Because he just signed to SmackDown. Jade Cargill just signed to SmackDown. Andrade just signed to SmackDown. These things just took place. Why are they eligible? It makes no sense. And if I'm Bron Breakker, then I'm pissed off because I weighed out my options. I chose SmackDown. So I wish that didn't happen. We saw Nia Jax get drafted to SmackDown. Maybe she could be joining the Bloodline 2.0, perhaps. And then Liv Morgan staying on Monday Night Raw. And we then have the Bloodline pull up to SmackDown. And Solo Sikoa asked Paul Heyman about them being drafted. And Paul was like, oh, not yet. And then he told Solo Sikoa what happened with Roman Reigns about him removing himself. And it led to Kevin Owens attacking Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga. Then we cut to Bianca Belair out being interviewed. She was asked about her and Jade Cargill having the chance to dethrone the Kabuki Warriors at Backlash. And she said Jade is the perfect person to help her get rid of damage control. The Kabuki Warriors showed up and then Jade Cargill showed up and they were screaming at each other back and forth. Didn't come to blows. And it led to Kevin Owens and Tama Tonga brawling straight through them into the ring. Solo Sikoa joins in, takes Kevin Owens out, and they beat him down. Tama Tonga taking out agents, taking out security guards, and Randy Orton makes a save. And I thought that was a really cool segment. It leads to Kevin Owens and Randy Orton versus the Bloodline at Backlash. The very first match of Tama Tonga at Backlash. I'm very much so looking forward to that. After that, the Dudley Boys came out. They did the gimmick that Bubba Ray did at WrestleMania with the glasses and not being able to see. So both of them put on their glasses to read their picks. SmackDown chose LA Knight. Monday Night Raw chose Ricochet. And then finally the Bloodline drafted. They were drafted Solo, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman to SmackDown. And then Monday Night Raw chose Sheamus. I think Sheamus being on Monday Night Raw makes sense. He literally just returned and he went to Raw. Earlier in the night, Tiffany Stratton stopped Nick Aldis in the hallway to ask for her title match. And he said someone gave him the idea to have Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi, where the winner will face Bayley at Backlash. Turns out Bayley was the one that came up with the idea, and then you go to have Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi go to a no contest. Bayley was on commentary. I liked what we had from this match. I enjoyed the running hip attack from Tiffany Stratton was nice. The split legged, whatever you want to call it, senton from Naomi off the apron I thought was cool, but also to hear Bayley putting over Tiffany Stratton was nice. Nia Jax showed up. And she took out Bayley, which distracted Naomi. She went out of the ring to help Bayley, only to get put down as well. And then Tiffany Stratton threw Bayley and Naomi into the ring and hit the moonsault on both of them. We had a backstage segment with the Street Profits and A-Town Down Under, which I thought was funny. That hypes up their tag team title match for next week on SmackDown, regardless of who was drafted. Regardless if the Street Profits, I guess, are drafted on Monday to Raw. And then we also saw the Final Testament beating up Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne. I thought for sure we were going to have them, like, run NXT or do something on NXT. So that was kind of weird, but it sets up British Strong Style versus AOP. Then the final picks of the night saw JBL and Teddy Long come out. SmackDown chose AJ Styles. Monday Night Raw chose Alpha Academy. I'm happy that they're staying on Monday Night Raw because for me, the end game is the Intercontinental Championship. Andrade stays on SmackDown. A surprise, Kiana James drafted to Monday Night Raw. That I'm very happy to see that. I'm a fan of Kiana James, and I'm looking forward to seeing her on Monday Night Raw. In the main event of SmackDown, we saw Cody Rhodes, the WWE Champion, pick up the victory over Carmelo Hayes. Good main event. I really liked when Carmelo Hayes teased going for the Crossroads. I also liked when both of them went for their springboard moves and missed. But Cody was able to hit the Crossroads, picked up the victory. And I think regardless of that loss, it's still a very big night for Carmelo Hayes, especially being drafted in the first round. And Cody helped him sit up and spoke to him after the match. So it looked like it was like a nod of approval from Cody to Carmelo Hayes. And then Cody was celebrating the victory. AJ Styles showed up and just stared Cody down. They shook hands. That closed SmackDown. I don't know if there's going to be a supplemental draft. They didn't say it. But if there is, we'll cover it next week. And that's pretty much it for SmackDown. Going to take a quick little break right now, and I'll be right back here on Marking Out.
This is Lance Storm, and if I can be serious for a minute, you're listening to Marking Out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 690 of Marking Out. Last week's Collision and Rampage were switched. I forget why. They aired on the same night. Collision kicked off with Edge, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe picking up the victory over Top Flight and Action Andretti. Mark Briscoe and Action Andretti, I think, had some good back and forth in the beginning. I think it was weird to hear Top Flight boot during this match, but they were going against Edge. House of Black appeared afterwards on the screen to speak with the team, and it just sells the pay-per-view. After that, Powerhouse Hobbs picked up the victory over CJ Esparza. Waste of time, in my opinion. It doesn't do anything for Powerhouse Hobbs to sell me a match against Jon Moxley, especially not for the IWGP Championship. You could beat a small little guy. Big whoop. This is Jon Moxley. After that, the Guns picked up the victory over the Acclaimed. Tony Schiavone announced that if the Guns walked out of the match, their match of the pay-per-view would be canceled, which was such a weird thing to have happen. But it started with all four of them in the ring. I hate having that stuff start like that. But it was funny to hear Tony Schiavone call Jay White a gimmick. I popped at that. But I think the Guns are a very good comedic tag team. They cheated a lot during this match. And I liked that the referee caught them each time. Well, with the exception of the ending, which I thought was awful. But because the referee turned all the way around from where the shoulders were, so he couldn't see Jay White cheating that final time. So that, I think, was the goofiest part of this. But overall, I thought the match was fine. After that, the Blackpool Combat Club, Brian Danielson and Claudio picked up the victory over the Don Callis family, Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher, in a bunkhouse brawl. And I don't understand why this happened. Why have Brian Danielson go into a pay-per-view match less than 100%? Ospreay, though, he said he had nothing to do with it. He didn't have anything to do with the thing on Dynamite the other week, the attack. He didn't want this match to take place, basically. I feel like he wanted Brian to have the best chance against him and be 100%. And he's playing face in this storyline, which it makes sense. He's being cheered. And it seems like, well, probably, maybe, I don't want to say probably, but it seems like we could see him break away from the Don Callis family. Powerhouse Hobbs got involved. John Moxley brawled with him. That was really the match. After that, Sky Blue picked up the victory over Layla Hirsch. Nice to see Layla Hirsch twice in 1 month. And I thought this match was good for what it was. I thought that victory roll German suplex that Layla Hirsch did from the top rope was really cool. And I would like to see more of her on television. After that, the main event saw FTR and Pac pick up the victory over the Elite. Most of these matches to me made no sense. And like I said last week, they tried to squeeze weeks worth of stories into an episode of Dynamite and an episode of Collision. And had this match happened a few weeks ago, I think that would have been fine as a match part of this feud. But to be the match the night before the actual match, I don't get that. And then we saw the Elite beat FTR and Pac down afterwards. Daniel Garcia tried to make the save, and he got beat down at first, but FTR and Pac had a comeback. On Rampage, you had Rob Van Dam pick up the victory over Isaiah Cassidy, Commander, and Lee Johnson in a high-flying 420 elimination match, where Isaiah Cassidy took out Lee Johnson pretty early on in the match. Commander took out Cassidy, and then Rob Van Dam beat Commander. I think the match was fine, but it only took place because of marijuana, which I think the match itself was a bit of a waste of time. I didn't need to see this match. But I did think it was crazy to see Commander like working circles around RVD. Which obviously Rob Van Dam's much older now, so. But and I think the ending of this match could have been much better. But overall, like I said, it was fine. It was just 420, bro. After that, Yuka Sakazaki picked up the victory over Emi Sakura. And like Layla Hirsch, I would like to see Yuka on TV more. It was nice to see her twice in 1 month as well. The biting spot from Emmy I thought was funny. It was also funny when she teased throwing the figure and the garbage energy drinks into the crowd, because I thought that got good heel heat. And this was a controversial match online because it seemed like Yuka may have been injured early on, and it slowed the match down big time. So I don't know if that spot with the figure and the drinks would have happened. If she did get hurt, then if that didn't happen, then I don't know if that would have happened. And then there was a spot later on where it looked like she may have been hurt more, and she tried to get the referee's attention, but the match continued and the ending was a bit abrupt. So I don't know. There was no update from what I remember on Yuka, on whether or not she was actually injured. So hopefully she's not. Hopefully she's fine. After that, Angelo Parker and Ruby Soho had an in-ring segment where it started out with Parker thinking about retiring. And then Ruby came out to announce that she's pregnant, like shoot pregnant, which obviously I had no clue they were even a thing together. But I think this was probably the best segment from their whole storyline. And I guess this pretty much explains why the storyline was so spread out and not making any sense. It was like start, stop, and she had disappeared. She was last seen, I think it was like February. Maybe. So congratulations to both of them. And maybe that'll be the end of the segment, the storyline. Main event of Rampage saw Kyle O'Reilly, Matt Menard, and Rocky Romero pick up the victory over the Undisputed Kingdom. I thought that was a really random team to face the Undisputed Kingdom, but it was a pretty standard six-man tag match. I thought it was decent. I think they should have waited to have Kyle O'Reilly and Roddy face off, though, especially since they haven't wrestled each other since 2018, and that was going to be on the pay-per-view. But that was Rampage. AEW Dynasty took place this weekend. I did not watch it. I saw clips of some of it on the buy-in. You saw Trent pick up the victory over Matt Sydal. Shibata and Orange Cassidy picked up the victory over Shane Taylor Promotions. And then I was shocked that this was on the kickoff show. Bullet Club Gold picked up the victory over the Acclaimed to become the Trios champions. I think this was the wrong call. I think it lowers Jay White to where he needs to not be. And the Acclaimed, I feel like, could have been that fun team if they were pushing them. We haven't seen the Trios championships pushed, really. So that was very unfortunate. The match, the main card opened up with Okada picking up the victory over Pac to retain. House of Black beat Edge, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe. Willow Nightingale picked up the victory over Julia Hart to become the new TBS champion. Very happy for Willow Nightingale here. We have followed her career pretty much since the beginning of it. So it's really cool to see somebody, especially a Long Island person, become champion, except for Chris Jericho, which I'll get to in a second. But Roderick Strong picked up the victory over Kyle O'Reilly to retain. I really think this was the wrong choice. I don't know what more they're going to do with that group, but I really think Kyle O'Reilly needed that victory. I don't know if there was any cheating or whatnot to actually have Roddy get that victory or not. I assume so. I hope so. Chris Jericho, though, picked up the victory over Hook to become the new FTW champion. This was probably the worst thing to have on this pay-per-view. After that, Tony Storm picked up the victory over Thunder Rosa to retain. Will Ospreay picked up the victory over Bryan Danielson. This was, a lot of people were saying, match of the year, big-time match. I saw clips of it. It looked fine. It looked like a good match from what I saw. The only thing that I did not like that I saw from this was the ending. Because I don't think Will Ospreay is that good of an actor. So, and also, I hate the fact that they do injury angles, especially with Bryan Danielson. We've seen it so many times in AEW, I feel like. But I don't think Ospreay's acting was good enough for me to be like, oh, Bryan's actually injured. Had that not taken place, I would have been like hook, line, and sinker. And then they aired a backstage exclusive on Twitter. And I was like solidified. I was like, oh, this is awful. This is clearly a storyline. Which, thank God. Thank God it's a storyline. After that, and it led to Will Ospreay saying he's going to retire the Tiger Driver 91. That'll probably eventually lead to that big blow up in the Don Callis family. We saw the Bucks, or people saw the Bucks, I didn't, pick up the victory over FTR to become the new tag team champions in a ladder match with the help of the returning Jungle Boy Jack Perry. And then the main event saw Swerve pick up the victory over Samoa Joe to become AEW champion. Awesome to see Swerve be champion. I think the writing was on the wall. It was very necessary to have him pick up that victory right then and there. Switching over to AEW Dynamite, it opened up with the Elite, and I could not understand them at all. And the sound for this, maybe like 90% of this episode, was awful. I could understand that security was trying to kick Jack out and keep him out. But the Elite, like, shooed them off, and they went into Daly's place. And then Orange Cassidy was making his way out, only to be attacked by Trent Barretta. And then Trent called Chuck out, and Trent said he's sorry that he didn't do this years ago. And he spoke about how Orange Cassidy was supposed to be their mascot, basically, and have them be, like, the main focus of their group, which I completely understand. And then Chuck ends up attacking Trent. Trent walked off and Chuck challenged him to a parking lot brawl. They have history in a parking lot brawl there. It makes sense. It's taking place, I think, on Rampage. So I'll talk about that next week. After that, Swerve picked up the victory over Kyle Fletcher in an elimination match. Or an eliminator match, I mean. And I think this can clearly set up further Swerve versus Ospreay in the future. Probably, maybe. I don't know if it's... I don't think Double or Nothing. Given that Will won that other match, it's probably All In. Probably All In Will Ospreay versus Swerve for the championship. But I thought this was a decent match. Nothing special. I was very annoyed that they cut away from the champion's first defense to show Jungle Boy going into Tony Khan's office. I thought that was so goofy. And then apparently Kyle Fletcher was supposed to cheat during this, and he had integrity, and he didn't do it. And they had a backstage segment afterwards where it seems like we're going to see Kyle Fletcher also perhaps leave the Don Callis family. Thunder Rosa was interviewed. Could not hear a single thing she was saying, but Deonna Purrazzo showed up and got in her face. So I don't know what that's about. Mina Shirakawa picked up the victory over Anna Jay. I like this match. This is probably my favorite match on the night of Dynamite. And I think they could have done so much more with the match, but I was fine with it. I really liked the pin finish from Mina that she did. And then she and Mariah May went to celebrate with the champagne, and Anna Jay knocked Mina Shirakawa out of the ring, locked Mariah May in the Queen Slayer, and then Toni Storm came out, and Anna Jay left, and then Serena Deeb came out. And I have absolutely, again, no clue what she said, because they didn't air the audio. I assume, obviously, it has to be with the title, because the title was sitting right there. But I have no idea what she said. After that, we had the Willow Nightingale Championship celebration, which was interrupted by Mercedes Moné. And she congratulated Willow, and then said that in 30-something days at Double or Nothing, she's going to be champion. So it does kind of feel like Willow is that transitional champion. Sort of like Swerve, too, because I don't feel like Swerve is going to be holding it past All In. So, I mean, right now it's April. That's in a few months. Hopefully we get a good, really good reign from Swerve if Ospreay is going to go over. And hopefully this reign with Willow will be a strong one. And we'll see week after week, maybe she'll defend it. Hopefully. But they all spoke about who attacked who. They all pointed fingers. They brought up Mercedes getting injured in their last match together. And Willow basically said that she wants to prove 100% that it wasn't a fluke. That she can beat Mercedes Moné when she's not injured. Quite frankly, I would love for Mercedes Moné to lose that match at Double or Nothing. And then we saw Chris Statlander grab Mercedes' arm, and she ends up slapping Willow instead. So maybe it was Chris Statlander who took both of them out. I don't know. After that, Will Ospreay won a casino gauntlet match to get a shot at the International Championship. I feel like this was such a random match. I don't know why Jay White was wrestling in this. He literally just unified Trios Championships. But it was overall a very chaotic and confusing match. Kyle O'Reilly was in this, and he literally just lost his title shot. Title match, even. Lance Archer brought weapons out. He ends up going through a table. And I think the match overall had some fun spots. But once Will Ospreay was out and known that he was in that match, you had to know he was winning that. And then we saw the Undisputed Kingdom show up, and they just did a face-to-face afterwards. Chris Jericho had an in-ring segment, really pushing this lightning tree not Lightning Tree, Learning Tree gimmick, which Brian Myers did the same exact gimmick in TNA Impact Wrestling like 2 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago. And then Big Bill interrupted and said he needs Chris Jericho's guidance. And we had Shibata backstage challenge Chris Jericho for the FTW Championship next week. And he's obviously going to lose. I don't know if anybody's going to enjoy this Learning Tree Jericho gimmick. After that, Jon Moxley picked up the victory over Powerhouse Hobbs to retain the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. They brawled in the crowd. They made sure to point out that they're able to stay out there for 20 seconds, or 20 count, I should say. Which I could still swear they announced that for AEW rules at one point, but, and I know other people thought that as well, so maybe it's just one of those Mandela effects, but Jon Moxley ends the match by choking Hobbs out. Dynamite ends with Jack Perry coming to the ring. Commentary mentioned how he tore up his AEW contract, which I thought was so cringe because that's not how contracts work. And he called Tony Khan out, and then Jungle Boy said that he wants what's best for AEW and he wants to be reinstated. And Tony Khan gave him that like super powerful handshake. They hugged. They did the arm raise and everything. And then Jack Perry hits Tony Khan in the gut with the microphone. Tony goes down as if he's Woody from Toy Story and Andy's about to show up. And then maybe 3 seconds or so goes by and he remembers he has to sell the fact that he got hit by Jungle Boy. So that looked awful. And then the Elite ran down and played it up as if Jack did something wrong. Oh, why would you do that? Don't do that. They helped Tony Khan up, even though he was just laid out there. He's up. He's at him. Perfectly fine. And then the three of them join in, basically. He gets hit with the Tony Khan driver, whatever they call it. I thought this was an awful ending. I thought this was an awful segment. Nobody in the back came out to help Tony Khan until after the Elite left or whatever. As soon as Jack Perry hits Tony Khan in the gut with the microphone, nobody runs down. How does that make any sense? And overall, really, I didn't think this episode of Dynamite was strong, especially as a follow-up for the pay-per-view. Obviously, they end with this big NWO-esque angle. That is a big angle. But I felt like this episode should have had more focus on Swerve becoming champion and being champion. And even during that segment, they focused on Jungle Boy instead of the champion. And for me, really the only way that this angle works 100% is if CM Punk is there. And he's not there. Maybe we'll see the big savior to this angle be MJF. But even still, the whole storyline is written about CM Punk. And he's in WWE. So that's AEW Dynamite. Hey, Brandon. Got any shoutouts?
Hey, VHF. We should listen to Brandon's shoutouts.
The first shout-out goes to the Tortured Poets Department. How could it not be the first shout-out? We wouldn't be the number one Taylor Swift pro wrestling podcast without mentioning Taylor Swift's brand new album. I enjoyed it. I listened to the full album that was out at midnight on Spotify, and then there was like teases where everyone's like, oh my God, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. And there was like a clock that said 2 a.m., you show back up at 2 a.m., she returns out, it's a double album. And she drops more tracks at 2 a.m. So I listened to those tracks. I very much so enjoyed it. If you have not listened to the album yet, you're probably not a Taylor Swift fan.
I gotta say, I haven't even heard one song from it yet.
Not even Fortnite featuring Post Malone?
I saw a video of it, like a 5-second clip that was featured on the news, but I haven't heard anything from the album.
He has two DDP tattoos on his face, and I obviously, because I know he's a wrestling fan, and because I'm a huge wrestling fan, I had to assume that it's a DDP reference. Diamond Dallas Page. He's even got the cards next to one of them. DDP's got cards tattoo. Apparently his daughter's initials are DDP.
I mean, it's very, very possible. I mean, I don't know. Like I said last week or a few weeks ago, I feel like I just need a break from Taylor Swift stuff.
Well, my next shout out goes to Fallout, which is based on the video game, but I've literally only played it once for 5 minutes. And that was only after I watched the first few episodes. Somebody gifted me a code because with Amazon Prime, they were giving it out for free.
That's cool.
Do you have any clue about these games or the television?
I've watched some of a Let's Play of Fallout, but I don't know anything about the TV show.
I don't even know which Fallout version.
Watch.
I don't know which Fallout version it was that I was playing. I probably never play it again. I wasn't so sold on it. It wasn't my cup of tea. But I saw the trailer before even knowing it was for a show based on a video game, I guess. And I thought it looked good. And I very much so enjoy this show. Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins are among the stars of this. And if you're like me, like I said, you know nothing about the game. It's a post-apocalyptic drama. It's a little mix of sci-fi, a little mix of like a Western. And I'm pretty sure it's already picked up for season two. And it was cool to see Kevin Matthews in a scene, so I wasn't expecting that. I thought that was pretty funny. So if you're into any sort of post-apocalyptic, sci-fi, Western, anything, I think this show is for you. I really think you would love this show.
Yeah, I'm sure. I just don't have Amazon Prime.
Right. And then my last shout out goes to Conan O'Brien Must Go. I watched the whole season in a day. It's only 4 episodes, which is, I almost cursed. It's BS.
Oh, hey.
4 episodes is not enough of this, but it's definitely like Conan Without Borders, but it's also very out there at times. And I can't quite describe it, but it sometimes feels like a show that he made just to pop himself. Which I definitely thought everything in this show is funny. So check it out. It's on it's on Max. He goes to Norway, he goes to Thailand, Argentina, Ireland. And like I said, 4 episodes is not enough. So hopefully we get more. I would love to see a second season. I would love to see a second season with way more episodes than that. So those are my shout outs. Now it's time for
Markout Moment of the Week.
That is right, our Markout Moment of the Week. I think based on last week, I think it was a Saturday, Matt Hardy returned to TNA as Broken Matt Hardy at Rebellion.
Yeah. This was awesome. The crowd reaction was great. And when you see the clip, you just have to be, I don't know, I feel like a sense of happiness for Matt Hardy as a person, not just a wrestler, you know, just to feel that appreciation from the crowd with this return to TNA.
Yeah. I mean, he was definitely not getting that kind of a reaction where he was in AEW.
Yeah.
But he also said that he's not signed. So maybe he can still be part of the Wyatt story in WWE eventually. Because we did get more of those QR codes this week. So,
yeah, that stuff is definitely getting me to mark a bit.
Yeah, going to be going down the rabbit hole with that.
Mm-hmm.
I also popped for on Monday Night Raw. Michael Cole mentioned Gail Kim on Monday Night Raw. And she was mentioned as the only other woman to have won a championship in a battle royal. So Becky Lynch, and it's like a pretty rare company in general, Becky joins her, Kurt Angle, and Great Khali as the only superstars to win a world championship inside a battle royal.
Wow.
So I think that's pretty cool. And I not in a million years would have expected for them to mention Gail Kim. Not in a million years would I have expected to have seen Jazz at WrestleMania and all that stuff. So maybe we will see them included soon.
It would be nice.
Like some sort of Legends deal or something. Gail Kim, I think 100% could be in the Hall of Fame. Jazz can 100% be in the Hall of Fame as well. So I think that was pretty cool. You have any other markout moments?
Let's see. I feel like that really covers a lot of the markout moments that I had. Did you mark out for Tony Khan? I marked out for him taking that punch the way he did. It was very realistic. I felt so bad for him.
Was it realistic?
I really felt so I felt so bad for him. Is that how somebody falls
after they get punched in the gut?
I did mark at one point during that where the Young Bucks were lifting him up into whatever their finisher is.
It's now called the Tony Khan driver. It was at one point called the Meltzer driver. Well, who must be so pissed off that he wasn't part of that segment.
No, the one where they both were picking him up from the ground.
Yeah, the Elite Trigger or something.
Yeah,
I don't know what they specifically call it, but
yeah, I was kind of marking.
I thought
during
for
that
sure they were going to hit that. That didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I was marking during that part to see if they were actually going to hit that, but for Jack Perry to actually punch Tony Khan, I didn't really mark out over that part. I feel like with Jack Perry, could have gone either way with either a face or a heel. I have to see more of
it. It makes no sense,
this.
Yeah. I said it before, the only way that this storyline to me works is if CM Punk is part of it, and he's not, so...
Yeah, I think I just have to see more of everything with this, but...
I don't.
Yeah.
Man. But that is episode 690. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at MarkingOut. You can follow us... singularly, BTTG161 on both platforms, Chris Sweendog, CMSweeney85, David PTDPT, Facebook.com/MarkingOut, Instagram and YouTube, where you can also listen to episodes, are MarkingOut11, ProWrestlingTees.com/MarkingOut gets you some merch. We would greatly appreciate it. We would appreciate it more if you would just hit us up on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. We would very much so appreciate that. And like I said, thank you so much for tuning in. We wish you the
best of luck in your future endeavors.